The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome to a special edition of First Take. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty on all charges in the death of George Floyd. Chauvin was found guilty of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, second-degree manslaughter by a jury Tuesday for his role in the murder of Floyd last May. Floyd's death in the video, which showed Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes, became a catalyst for the sports world's racial and social justice movement last summer. Chauvin faces a 40-year maximum sentence for the second-degree unintentional murder conviction, a 25-year sentence for third-degree murder, and a 10-year sentence for second-degree manslaughter. A jury of 6 white, 4 black, and 2 multiracial jurors deliberated for 10 and a half hours over parts of 2 days before rendering a verdict. Joining us now, friend of the show, social and political commentator, and host of the On One podcast, great title, Angela Rye, also an attorney. Let me mention that as well. Angela, thank you so much for being with us this morning. And I want to start with your initial reaction to the verdict.
Yeah, my initial reaction, I think, like so many of us, was a collective sigh of relief, you know, that finally justice would be served in this case. And I think that State Attorney General Keith Ellison, former member of Congress, said it best when he said this was accountability, which reminds us that we still have a long road to go towards real justice. So many of us put the burden of every case that was not ruled in our favor on Derek Chauvin. And I think that's it's reasonable to understand. But you consider that just 10 days ago, Dante Wright was killed 10 miles from where this trial was taking place. You consider that just minutes before the verdict was even read, Makia Bryant in Columbus, Ohio, was shot and killed 3 times in the chest. A 16-year-old black girl who, and the officer had been on the scene apparently for 20 seconds. Right. So it's really hard to even see something like the Raiders tweet where they say, "I can breathe." I understand they were referencing George Floyd's brother's comments, but we can't breathe yet. We can't breathe because Eric Garner couldn't breathe, but perhaps his video wasn't long enough. We can't breathe because Manny Ellis, from where I'm from in Washington State, you know, was choked and held down by not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 officers. And there's still no accountability from him. That event happened last March before George Floyd. Right. And so we can't breathe. We can't relax. We can't allow this one verdict to be justice for every black life who mattered and didn't ever see justice. And perhaps the perpetrators never even saw the inside of a courtroom.
Angela, thank you for being on the show. Let me make a statement and then I'm going to ask you a question, because I want to say something to white folks out there that have a difficult time understanding where black folks are coming from when we talk about police brutality or a bit brutality on the part of some law enforcement officials, whatever way you want to say it. Dylann Roof goes and shoots 9 people in a church in South Carolina, and he ends up arrested. Somebody walks into a supermarket in Colorado who's not black. They end up arrested after killing 10 people, but unarmed black folks find themselves dead. That is a very, very difficult thing to comprehend. And so for me, Angela, I bring this question to you. You talk about how we can't drop the ball. We got to stay on it because, okay, we got the verdict. This is just one case. As far as I'm concerned, Angela, this case ain't over. The judge gets to decide how much time this guy is going to get. And that's been a focal point for me since this show started this morning. The judge gets to decide. Excuse me, it's a concurrent sentence because it's a state crime, not federal. So it's going to be served concurrently, not consecutively. As a result, they can go after the 40 years, which is the stiffest penalty, the stiffest charge for the second degree unintentional murder. But still in all, the judge can sit up there and give him half that. And in the state of Minnesota, if you have no criminal record, which this officer apparently did not, you usually only serve two-thirds of your sentence, which means we're talking about 12 and a half years. We got cats dealing weed that serve more time than that. So I asked the question to you, Angela, how concerned are you and how concerned do you think we should be? As an attorney, knowing what you know, how concerned should we be about this judge and what this judge is going to do in a case like this?
Well, Stephen, you bring up a great point, and I will tell you, most of yesterday afternoon, right after the verdict was read, I was saying the same thing. Like, now we got sentencing. You know, this sentencing hearing will be held the day after Juneteenth, which hopefully for us, knowing that that was our true Emancipation Day, means something good in our favor. But I could totally understand and appreciate the tension, the unreadiness, the uneasiness, and the anxiety that you feel around sentencing. We know that Black folks get stiffer penalties and stiffer sentences for far less. And I think that the reality that is before us is this is another teachable moment about how important it is for us to engage in our civic power. What am I talking about? Judges, in so many instances, are elected, right? The ways in which laws are enacted, enforced, are things that can be dictated by who we put into office. And so those are the things that we need to start taking into consideration. They ended up with a good jury. Sometimes, as you know, Stephen A., that's not always the case. Jury duty is a part of your civic power and responsibility as a registered voter. Saying all of that to say, no, we shouldn't just relax. No, we should not brush this aside. Yes, we should be highly concerned about what this judge does in particular, because he decided to address something that Congresswoman Waters said while on the ground in Minneapolis, that people who are supporters of BLM, Black Lives Matter, and protesters should be more confrontational. For whatever reason in the minds of some scared white folks out here, that sounds like violence. I don't understand why. Confrontation means to me to be sure and clear about where you stand, about making your demands, about ensuring that justice is in fact served. But for whatever reason, this judge in this case, the one that you're so concerned about, rightfully so, chose to bring this up to the defense team when they said that this was grounds for a mistrial, her remarks. So he said to address it on appeal, of course, not necessarily encouraging appeal, but letting them know where this could be addressed. But the fact that he would say it's inappropriate, it gives me great pause. I don't know what he'll do.
The original statement out of Minneapolis was that a man died. By the way, it's nice to see you again, Angela. And good to have you on the show. The original statement out of Minneapolis was that a man died as a result of a medical complication after a police interaction. And then we see the video of what actually happened. So the idea of mistrust from African-American toward law enforcement is there's a long history there. There's also a history in this country of disenfranchising and limiting Black power, both at the ballot box, starting, you know, obviously starting with slavery, but certainly during Reconstruction and Jim Crow and purging Black people from voter rolls and all of that. But now what we also see is are the following measures being taken. There's voter suppression, a law just enacted in Georgia. No, it expands voting rights. Yeah, to people in rural areas, it makes it harder for people in urban areas. And there are also in these state legislatures all these anti-protest bills where the idea is that it makes it more difficult to stage the kind of protests with the backdrop of a pandemic in this case, but to stage the kind of protests that raised awareness that probably contributed to a just verdict in this case. What are your thoughts on the kind of organized plans afoot to limit Black voices and Black power?
Yeah, it's a great question, and Max, it's good to see you too. The first thing I would say is addressing just the point that you raised around a man died, right? So often what we've seen in this country is that even with video, that's not good enough. There was a meme going around on social media last week that said, ain't nothing changed since Rodney King but the video quality, right? And that's something that we really, really have to wrestle with. The fact that ain't nothing changed about oppressive state laws, local ordinances, and federal laws haven't changed much either. The fact that folks who are white supremacists, racists, having some type of implicit bias or discriminatory issue, but a part of the oppressive system, continue to find innovative and creative ways to oppress and suppress not just Black power, but the power of a number of people of color and women and folks from the LGBTQIA community. That's not new either. So people are all of a sudden surprised by voter suppression efforts, but they shouldn't be, because there were these same efforts taking place right after the election of Barack Hussein Obama, right? There were more than 140 state legislatures who tried to adopt or enacted voting rights legislation, dialing back of voting rights, ending early voting, cutting back the number of ending absentee voting, cutting back the number of early voting days, making folks have to produce voter ID. Now, it'll be a misdemeanor if you give somebody water at the polls, right? These are the kinds of things that happen when people step into their power just a little bit. Nothing has changed around protesting either. If it wasn't the law on the book, it was the baton on the back of someone's head. The person I'm thinking about right now is John Lewis, who was just fighting to ensure that Black people could vote like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just add this. Thank goodness that Darnella Frazier stepped into her power, the 17-year-old who was threatened by Derek Chauvin. And I mentioned this at the top of the show because I don't think we would have this verdict without having that video. And you shouldn't even have to have the video to begin with, but it is what it is. Angela, sticking around here with us. When we can return here on First Take, I also want to mention this. Jazz star Rudy Gobert shared his thoughts after the verdict. Let's hope that one day justice for all will feel normal and not like a celebration. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Today was a good day for, you know, African Americans and anybody else that's been a part of injustice that comes to the hands of police brutality and acts like that. And so, you know, we look forward to the sentencing in a couple of months, and hopefully, you know, that brings complete closure for the family and a lot of people in this country. You know, obviously we have a long way to go as people, as a society here, but today was a start. It was a good day.
Welcome back to First Take. Derek Chauvin found guilty of all three charges for his role in the murder of George Floyd. And Angela Rye back here with us. Angela, we know this verdict is where the real work begins. So where do we go from here?
It's a great question. I think a number of places. One, today, the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland's leadership, who, of course, is the Attorney General, name might be familiar to some of you because he was also a Supreme Court nomination pick by Barack Obama, who the Senate would not confirm. But as the Department of Justice's Attorney General, he is announcing today that there will be a broad sweeping investigations into the Minneapolis Police Department. Very, very important step to take, but we all realize that this is something that has to be a broad sweeping investigation throughout police departments all over the country. Again, mentioning the name of Makia Bryant, who is the young woman who was shot and killed just yesterday in Columbus, Ohio. Columbus, Ohio, this would not be a part of the broad sweeping investigation in the Minneapolis Police Department. How do we ensure that broad sweeping investigations, pattern and practice examinations, new standards are built into grant money, whether or not the police departments have access to some of that money? All could be answered with the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. the times where police unions have hid under the cover of qualified immunity would be addressed in the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. We talked about this on the show last time. Why does this matter? This bill was introduced, passed in the House last Congress, right after the death, the killing of George Floyd. It was also introduced in the Senate, died in the Senate. This year, new Congress, Congressmember Karen Bass, the former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, anchored by all of the members of the CBC, many members of the Tri-Caucus, which include the Hispanic Caucus and the Asian Pacific American Caucus, they all support this bill. This bill passed the House again. Where is it? Sitting in the Senate. Just like today, the Senate has the opportunity to confirm the first ever woman of color as the Assistant Attorney General. First woman to have a civil rights background. Can we see why that might be important in this day and age? That's what's important. Folks can get on the phones today. You breathed a sigh of relief yesterday, perhaps. You're saying that we have further to go. We can't keep saying that without having an idea of what that journey looks like, what that roadmap looks like. It looks like calling the Senate, 202-224-3121. They have a job to do. Pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. They have a job to do. Confirm Vanita Gupta. They have a job to do. Confirm Kristen Clark, the nominee for the Civil Rights Division at DOJ, which again is the Department of Justice. We have a lot that we can do, and we have to stop giving our power away. We can start with making that call.
You know, Angela, I'm listening to you right now, and believe it or not, one of the people that I think about a lot is Hall of Famer, now a commentator and a basketball analyst, Mr. Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is the former president of the NBA Players Association in the late 80s and early 90s. And what people like, or a lot of people don't realize, first of all, I've known Isaiah Thomas for over 30 years. He actually gave me my first interview, Max, of a professional athlete. I was a high school reporter, and he gave me an interview while he was still with the Detroit Pistons. And I remember back at that time, he was fighting for blacks and females to cover the NBA. He was calling out the media industry because he was saying that the black athlete is only seen through the gaze of white males. And he was crucified for it, for amplifying that fact and focusing on the need to make it change. And what a lot of people don't realize is Isaiah Thomas has a lot to do with a lot of blacks being able to cover the sport and address and amplify these issues. So now we fast forward to 2021 with everything that you just said, Angela. You and I both know what the deal is. The fact of the matter is it's gonna stay in the Senate, probably ain't gonna pass because Mitch McConnell and those boys are running the show on the Senate side as opposed to the House. We understand what that is. So with that being the reality, with everything that you're saying needs to happen, what can actually be done at this particular moment in time in the weeks and months to come is what I'm talking about with the Senate, the makeup of the Senate being what it is.
Well, I think that there's one silver lining. And I would disagree slightly on the leadership. At least it's a 50-50 split. And when the Senate has a 50-50 split.
That's true.
We know what it is. Kamala Harris is the tie-breaking vote, right?
Yeah.
So we have that. Here's the challenge, Stephen A., to your point, though. We have some members on the Democratic side of the aisle in the Senate who are very reticent to attach their names to a vote in favor of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. One of those folks is the senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, who, he has a lot of power because of where he sits. And this was also the Democratic senator who supported and endorsed Donald Trump. So folks could start by calling him. I am always reluctant to give my power away and say that we are facing an uphill battle. I don't want to lie to people either. But that doesn't mean that things can't change. There were a lot of people who said, Stephen A., me included, that I was very, I don't know how this is going to end up. It's going to be a mistrial. It's going to be a hung jury. I did not think that we were going to end up with him convicted of three charges. I did not think we were going to end up there. And so sometimes we end up being wrong. So today, y'all, I'm asking you to prove Stephen A. wrong.
Well, I hope I'm
going to get this bill across the finish line. We got to start somewhere. And I hope that people will take it a step further and really understand what can happen on the local and state level, because that's really where the power is in changing law enforcement on
the
ground.
And I appreciate you answering the question that way. I know we got to go. I mean, Warnock and Loeffler, I mean, and Ossoff. I went brain locked for a second. I forgot
that's
about
okay.
the 50-50 split for a second.
Teamwork.
So I apologize.
I got your back.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
And we can all follow Angela's lead and not just talking and actually doing. So to hear more from her, of course, check out our podcast, follow her on social media, A Wealth of Knowledge. Angela, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
All right. The conversation continues after this break. Ryan Clark will join us. And Megan Rapinoe had this reaction to the verdict, sending love and strength to Minnesota today, to the family and community of George Floyd and so many others. Whatever happens, Derek Chauvin killed George. We know this. Let's continue to fight for a world where this doesn't happen.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's never a time to celebrate, you know, when someone's killed. And, you know, my thought and prayers go, you know, to, you know, the Floyd family. And, maybe this will help us heal, and you know, we'll cease with the violence. So I'm just hoping that this sends us in a positive direction.
Welcome back to a special edition of First Take. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty on all charges in the death of George Floyd. Chauvin was found guilty of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter by a jury Tuesday for his role in the murder of Floyd last May. Floyd's death in the video, which showed Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes, became a catalyst for the sports world's racial and social justice movement last summer. Chauvin faces a 40-year maximum sentence for the second-degree unintentional murder conviction, a 25-year sentence for the third-degree murder, and a 10-year sentence for the second-degree manslaughter. A jury of 6 white, 4 black, and 2 multiracial jurors deliberated for about 10 and a half hours over parts of 2 days before rendering a verdict. Joining us now is Ryan Clark. Ryan, great to have you with us here this morning, or more like this afternoon at this point. Ryan, what was your initial reaction to the verdict?
I think more relief than anything. I've been conditioned, like most of us, like most black people, not only recently, whether it be Jacob Blake, Breonna Taylor, or Trayvon Martin, any of the things that we've had simply since I've been working here or in the league. And you just think back 1955, Emmett Till, you think 1992, Rodney King. So often we've seen that there's no value put on African-American lives, on the lives of black men, on the lives of black women. And that's not only by the people that take those lives, but the courts that decide if they will be held accountable for those things. I cried. When I heard the verdict, I looked at my wife and we had the conversation about relief. I was in no way happy. There is in no way time to celebrate someone losing their life, someone getting their life taken by another human. This wasn't a sacrifice. George Floyd wasn't a martyr. He didn't decide to volunteer himself as tribute for the rest of the world to finally get some justice. I think the other thing that we have to remember is that though the jurors had a tough decision to make from the sense of we have not seen those decisions made in America in that way, this was the only decision. This was being watched by not only every American, this was being watched around the world. And for maybe the last 4 years, especially the last year and a half, America has been the laughing stock of the world. People have looked at us and looked at the dysfunction, looked at the disparity in the way that people are treated, and understood that things here needed to change, and they were not changing. They were actually going in the wrong direction. And so at a time that we're dealing with Dante Wright's death, and at a time that we lose another sister, teenager, shortly after the verdict is handed down, at least for a second, there was some relief. At least for a second, there was some justice. But the jurors are not heroes. The legislation in Minnesota are not heroes. They just finally did what is right and what they are supposed to do. They held Derek Chauvin accountable under the law. And that was their jobs. At least finally, their jobs also coincided with justice and the right thing for black people.
Well, there's been a lot of talk today about reaction and some confusion, I think even internal confusion with individuals, black and white. How am I supposed to react? Like, the way I'm reacting to this doesn't feel right, or I don't feel like celebrating. And I would never tell someone, especially an African-American person, how to feel about a moment like that. I will say that I think symbols are important. And they can be more emotive, like they're more emotive issues than giant legislation that has like giant systemic change, right? I mean, criminal justice reform is more important, probably has a greater impact than police interaction with communities of color, right? And yet there's something about this that's emotive. And I think about, you know, it's been talked about today. Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier and people celebrate it. But wait a minute, we're celebrating a black man being allowed to play at the highest level? It's absurd. That should, you know, but these symbols are important. And even in this case, I think, to me, you look at a situation where with incontrovertible video evidence, we see a murder occurred. And by the way, jury didn't take long. Came back, it was an open and shut case. Wait, we should celebrate that? But if it makes you feel good as a symbol, whether or not you know it also indicates, but wait a minute, it only makes you feel good because it's gone wrong so often. It reminds me of what Molly, what you brought up earlier about the symbolism of Kaepernick kneeling versus Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck because... Not to make some pat kind of, oh, look, there's a similarity. No, because when Kaepernick kneeled, most of white America didn't seem to get it. And what was he kneeling for? Broadly, social injustice. More narrowly, specifically, police interactions with communities of color, police brutality. That's what it was specifically about. And how dare he? And now we fast forward half a decade, and the verdict comes down of a white officer kneeling on a black man's neck and murdering him. And now we look back at Kaepernick and think, many people, and think, okay, I get it now. And for the people who still don't get it, guys, I would say that they are marshaling the forces of injustice still as we speak. Legislation out of state legislators legislatures that try to ban protests or limit protests and the like. And I would say that voter suppression laws in Georgia, because they don't like who got elected. And we have to be vigilant about that and also keep an open mind about people of goodwill who are ignorant or have been misinformed or are otherwise tone deaf, but who can be brought into the fold. I think that's important, too.
Yeah. Today certainly isn't justice, but it's accountability. And I know Ryan and Stephen A. will want to respond to you after the break. And I also have a question I want to ask both of them, too. So we'll step aside for a quick minute. I also want to share this with you. NASCAR's Bubba Wallace had this to say on this historic movement. Justice served on all counts. Good. Still a ton of work to do. Continue to rest peacefully. George Floyd. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Hopefully this is the start of something, really powerful. You know, a lot's been made of it, and obviously it's not a great thing, but I don't know. I just keep thinking about how powerful it was to see people from all over the world, literally all over the world, you know, come together and take a stand for something. That's huge. So try to remember like the positive out of the situation.
Blake Griffin with his thoughts there. Ryan Clark back here with us. And Ryan, I want to start with you and get your thoughts on this. So the Raiders created a little controversy yesterday with this tweet after the Chauvin verdict. I can breathe with the date 4/20/21. Owner Mark Davis took responsibility for the tweet, but he does not plan to delete it. And then he was asked about it, Ryan, if he was familiar with the Eric Garner situation. He said he was not. He didn't know that athletes and many folks were wearing shirts after the fact that said, I can't breathe. And he said he needs to do more research and that he learned something. What was your take on this whole situation?
I listened to Max earlier talk about people who may be a little tone deaf or people who might not be educated as well as other, but who actually have good intentions. I think Mark Davis is intending to show that he wants to be on the right side of this, that he supports those who support George Floyd, that his players who are African Americans, his players who feel like the George Floyd case could affect them, could affect their family members, that understand that they could be that individual lying on the ground underneath Derek Chauvin's knee, that he wants them to know that he has their back. I think part of that is admitting that he needs to learn, but I also think that another part of it could be taking down the tweet. It's okay to say, you know what, I was attempting to support, but if this made the people who I'm intending to support feel a certain way, then I can also say that I made a mistake and let me rectify it. For so long, African-American people and minorities have been told that, you know what, you have to accept a certain level of treatment, that we are going to give you all that we want to give you and only what we want to give you. We can only value you to a certain point. And so I think Mark Davis, understanding the reaction to this tweet, understanding the reaction to these words, knowing how these words historically would affect the African American, the Black community, now you could say, you know what? Let me show that I'm further on your side by listening. Let me show that I can now understand and make adjustments based off of how things make you feel. And I've heard over and over again, and I've talked to a lot of my white friends and the people that I'm close to who have sent text messages or who have called me to have discussions, to understand further, who were on the side of right initially when George Floyd was murdered by Derek Chauvin, and have the discussion about how things make me feel. Because what Mark Davis will never know is how watching George Floyd take his last breath feels to a Black man. He'll never know what it feels like to be nervous every time your son or your daughter gets in a car, every time you think about them having certain interactions with the police department outside of your home, whether you think they're criminals or not. He won't know that. And so part of that is being able to listen, being able to digest, and being able to react accordingly. I understand the initial sentiment. I understand the initial mistake. What I don't understand is not being humble enough to understand that there's a way to rectify that and show even more so than your attempt at the first tweet that you are on the side of the people who support George Floyd, who support his family, and who want to see things changed in America.
Real quick, Ryan, because you referenced something that I said and I want to give Stephen A., I want to give you time. I completely agree with that sentiment. It's like Black Lives Matter. When a lot of white people first heard that, it said all lives matter. And it had to be explained to them. Yes, mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter means Black Lives Matter means parenthetically too. Black Lives Matter too. Your lives already seem to matter. But that was confusing to people. But I also totally agree with the idea that once you're told that, hey, this is offending people, then don't do a Dan Snyder and double down and say, I'll never change the name. Listen and learn something and respond accordingly.
Go ahead, y'all. We don't have Stephen time. Knight? We gotta go to commercial break. I know that. That's why I said I'll wait until they come back.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't hear you. Ryan, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate your perspective. And we'll talk to you soon. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Final thoughts from Stephen A. and Max this break. And here's what Magic Johnson had to say after the verdict was announced. Thank God, guilty, justice has been served.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
I think there's a lot of change that needs to be done in terms of law enforcement. I think the George Floyd bill should be passed, and I think we're taking steps in the right direction, but we have a long, long ways to go as a society, especially when it comes to law enforcement and how the black and brown people have been treated historically.
Welcome back to this First Take special. Derek Chauvin found guilty in all three charges for the murder of George Floyd. Max, I'll start with you. What are your final thoughts on this historic verdict?
Well, in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, justice postponed is justice denied. And the Emancipation Proclamation did not end racism, nor did Juneteenth, nor Brown, nor Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier, nor Brown versus the Board of Ed, nor the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And this won't end racism either. This is, as many have pointed out, largely symbolic, but it's a symbol, I think, that came about because against the backdrop of a global pandemic and a lot of social upheaval, people led by black people, but also people of good social conscience, made their voices be heard in the streets and at the ballot box. And while there's still a long way to go, and I know, Stephen A., you point to the, now you want to see what the judge does in terms of the actual sentencing and what happens in many other cases across the country similar to this one. Because the sense is you wake up every day and nothing ever changes. And many people, and many black people, have lived their entire lives and died in this country basically feeling like around an issue like this, nothing has ever changed. And then you wake up one day and after a lot of work and suffering, something has changed. And this day, whether or not it has a lasting effect, and we'll see what the verdict, what the sentencing is, feels to me like one of those days, if even only symbolic, that means something.
You know, sometimes, and it's not like we're not justified in feeling that way as black people because of what we have had to endure. But on many, many occasions, people walk around and it's like we haven't made progress. Well, we have made progress, but we still have a long way to go. And situations like this highlight and illuminate how far we still have to go and the kind of things that we have to do to address concerns and to ultimately address change. As black folks, as a member of the black community, that's what we have to continue to do. Highlight and illuminate things when they transpire and fight the good fight to make sure that justice is served and that we speak to the better side of people. And to white folks out there who are tired of hearing arguments about racism and things of that nature, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not racist, if you're not prejudiced, if you're not unfair, if you don't look down on people, if you don't exercise behavior that allows you to feel entitled and like you're above folks and you treat people like they're beneath you, particularly because of the color of their skin and beyond, we're not talking about you. So it should be easier for you to join the fight with those who have been ostracized, marginalized, and demonized and treated negatively. Join hands with them and fight the good fight. It contributes to making us a better society. And that's where the focus should be moving forward.
If it was justice, George Floyd would be alive, but it is accountability. Thanks for being with us.